Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Good morning, Congressman Himes. Thanks for being here this morning. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. I'm very, very glad this week is over. Thank you very much.
I'm sure you are. I was watching actually snippets yesterday afternoon of your Facebook Live. I know you got a lot of questions on there. So I actually had some similar questions, but others apart from that. First of all, you know, I know a lot of people are bracing for next week. We know that here, Washington, D.C., across the country, we don't know if there are going to be protests, hopefully no riots happening as we lead into this weekend and into next week. My biggest question, though, still comes back to the Capitol and what happened there. Do you know if there are any new security measures in place, like something as simple as checking IDs or metal detectors? I mean, I don't know. I've never been in the Capitol myself. But are there talks about how do we, I guess, avoid this going forward or ensure that even if people decide they agree with rioters, that this doesn't happen again?
Yeah, of course. And first of all, you got to come down to the Capitol. Come on. I mean,
I've seen it. I've been outside, but I've never actually walked inside the Capitol. So, I mean, if you're inviting me,
understood.
I certainly will go.
Understood. Well, you have a standing invitation.
Thank you so much.
Yes. And I mean, I report it with no joy whatsoever. But I was down last week, obviously, and I'll be down next week for the inauguration. And the reason I say I report it with no joy is that one of the wonderful things about our Capitol was that it's always been largely open. I mean, there was a lot of security, but it's, you know, it's really pretty easy to get in there. And now I tell you, it looks like an armed camp outside of Beirut, Lebanon. It is just so sad to see. You've got, you know, two perimeters of 8-foot fencing. You've got thousands of armed National Guardsmen in camouflage. There are now metal detectors outside the chamber, which caused a ruckus last week. No, it's a totally, totally different place. And I know why they did it. I was there for the insurrection and for the rioting. And obviously we've got an inauguration coming up, which is the one moment in time other than the State of the Union where you've got almost your entire federal government in one place. So I don't blame them. It's the right thing to do, but it's just so profoundly sad. I mean, it's just such a visual representation of this terrible, terrible political moment the country is in. And I'll tell you, I hope that Joe Biden sets a tone and that people calm down and that that it all goes away, because it's just an awful look for our Capitol.
So we need to talk, obviously, about the impeachment process, because the House voted to impeach President Trump. It happened. But there's not going to be a Senate trial, basically, until he's out of office, if they decide to continue with the Senate trial. So there are questions in regards to, was this the best way to go? Was another impeachment? Or a lot of people have referred to the 14th Amendment Section 3, which, you know, talks about how if you are a standing president, basically you can't engage in insurrection or rebellion against your country. So I didn't know, you know, your thoughts on that, you know, the point of the impeachment process. I know for some people it was that President Donald Trump could never run again. But now that there's not going to be a Senate trial, maybe until after he leaves office, you know, where do you go from here?
Yeah, great question, and I don't know the answer. You know, ultimately it'll be decision of the Senate leader, which in I guess about 4 or 5 days will be Chuck Schumer. It will be a decision for the Senate leader whether to hold a trial. Now, why do you hold a trial against somebody who's no longer in office? And by the way, there's another important question which they're all going to need to think about. Fortunately, I won't be in the room because it's a tough choice. But, you know, the new Biden administration, they're going to need to confirm hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of senior officials to take the reins of government. And it's not just, you know, oh, let's wait and take our time. I mean, you know, we've got a brutal, brutal COVID epidemic raging in the country and all sorts of other issues. So you've got the confirmations, you've got the desire to get this COVID package that Biden talked about yesterday done. So, yeah, they're going to have some tough thinking to do. Really, there's two reasons to do it. You know, on the one hand, you could take advantage of a conviction in the Senate, which, again, I think is very much open to question of whether it would happen, given that you saw meaningful Republican support for impeachment, but it was not huge. Mm-hmm. you could rule that the president can't run for office in the future. And by the way, you'd get a lot of evidence, right? You know, you'd get evidence around who the president talked to, what precisely was his role in instigating the insurrection. But yeah, there's going to be a hard choice to be made in the coming weeks because the Senate really has an awful lot to do.
Congressman Himes is here this morning, and, you know, you talk about the pandemic as well, Congressman, and we have been flooded at WICC. We have been getting calls from everyone who's 75 plus, even now 65 to 74, because they've now been included in Phase 1B. It's a very complicated matter because they can't apply right now for an appointment, only 75 plus. What I'm getting at is the governor made it very clear yesterday that, look, we've expanded who is now eligible to get the vaccine in this next phase, but we haven't doubled like our supply in actually getting the vaccines here to Connecticut, which is why it seems like we're not moving as quickly as people would like. Do you have an update in Washington? We keep hearing that this is from the feds. The feds aren't releasing these vaccines. We're worried about having enough for the second doses. Do you have any updates for us this morning from Washington on this?
Yeah, a little bit. And, you know, look, it was always going to take time. There's 3.5 million people in the state of Connecticut, and it was always going to take time. And if you think about it, there's just no natural distribution mechanism for this, which is why hospitals are doing our healthcare workers and CVS and Walgreens are taking care of our nursing homes. The good news is that Connecticut is actually at the very top of the list in terms of having putting, as they say, needles in arms, so much so that the feds are sending us an additional 50,000 vaccines as a reward for being I guess we're number five in the country right now. So
that's
top 10%,
heard, yeah.
not the very top of the list. You know, obviously, Pfizer, which is most of them, and Moderna are cranking these things out as absolutely fast as they can. But, you know, there's, 7 billion people on the planet? So
something like that,
again,
yeah.
It's just not going to happen overnight. And again, we're very lucky in the state of Connecticut that we've been, I think, exceeding expectations. And I'll tell you what I think. I thought we were going to be into the spring before we had, you know, people who weren't in nursing homes, people who weren't frontline workers, essential workers. And here we are signing up people who are over the age of 75. So all I can say is that I think Connecticut, anyway, is outperforming. And people just need to be patient and keep doing what they're doing. I mean, we've always been good at this in Connecticut, but keep doing what they're doing, wearing that mask, being careful in the grocery store, washing the hands, you know, all the stuff that is, you know, kind of on that in that regard, put Connecticut at the top as well.
Congressman Himes, we appreciate your time this morning. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk next week.
Thank you, Melissa. Take care.
Appreciate it. Good morning, Senator Kelly. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. I'm doing well. Yourself?
I can't complain. Thank you so much. I appreciate you asking. I couldn't help, though. It's in one of my top news stories this morning, actually, that two state reps right here in Fairfield County, actually, have offered a new tolling bill. So I think it's incredible that we're back to talking about tolls, even though it was totally kind of a bust in 2019. First of all, your thoughts on having tolls in Connecticut, and I have to imagine there are better ways for us to make income back here in Connecticut versus tolls.
Well, Melissa, it's not surprising because you'll hear me say over and over again, I believe that Connecticut Democrats' solution to every problem in the state is is the middle class wallet, and this is just another example. You know, the tolling was debated last session or two sessions ago, and it was rejected then. And due in large part that I know that we came up with an alternative plan that did not include tolling, but yet could still finance the needed improvements in our transportation system. Mm-hmm. And that was what was called Faster Connecticut, F-A-S-T-R. CT. And what it does is takes money out of the state's savings account, if you will, the rainy day fund, and invests it by spending it down on the burdensome debt that the state of Connecticut has and has put on our children, quite frankly. And the savings that's achieved, we then invest in transportation. It's kind of like someone who has, you know, $10,000 in a bank account. earning 1 or 2% interest. You take it out and you pay off a $5,000 credit card that's at 15 or 20%. That savings that you were paying on interest then frees up money in the household budget that you can then invest in something productive, like our transportation, that will actually help the Connecticut economy on two fronts. It helps people create jobs, and it makes it more affordable for Connecticut families to go to work. So it's a win-win, we feel, and that's a good alternative. I don't know what the Democrats are going to come up with. I have heard the governor talk about other revenue sources. So I think, you know, he's already proposed a 17-cent gas tax that is not linked to transportation. But once again, they keep looking at the middle-class wallet. It just makes it more unaffordable, more expensive for Connecticut families to try and survive.
Well, and I thought it was interesting. I don't know if you saw this, but I thought it was interesting that when you talk about the gas tax and all of it being related to the climate change bill, did you see that Governor Charlie Baker in Massachusetts nixed it? He said no to it. He just vetoed it yesterday, which I thought was really interesting just because we did see in some of our surrounding communities, some of our surrounding states decided they too wanted to get in on the climate change bill. But I was surprised that Massachusetts was like, nope, we're not doing it. So I thought that was really surprising, actually.
Yeah, and initially New York and New Jersey were also against it. It was really only Rhode Island and the possibility for Massachusetts. It runs north-south, and this is one of the issues with this initiative is that it runs north-south, almost along the Northeast Corridor, like the Amtrak rail line.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the prevailing wind comes from the west. So if we don't have buy-in from states like New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Ohio, what we're going to be doing is paying for this initiative to help states like Massachusetts and Rhode Island. But the folks that need to do it with us, like I'm saying, the states to our west, you know, if the prevailing wind is just going to bring their auto emissions to Connecticut, and it's really not going to achieve the desired result.
Interesting. State Senator Kevin Kelly is here now. For any of you who didn't know, Senator Kelly actually was the former ranking senator on the Insurance Committee, and sort of kind of piggybacking what you were saying about attacking the middle class here in Connecticut, we've touched on the health insurance tax a little bit. I want to dive into that a little bit more, though, because I know we talked about this public option, rather. That's what we were talking about last week. This week, though, it sounds like majority Democrats in the state legislature are proposing this Connecticut health insurance tax. First of all, it sounds like it's a tax on insurers. What is this all about?
Well, this is looking for a mechanism to pay for whether it's a public option or a reinsurance program. And what it does is it levies a tax on carriers. But what happens when you levy the tax is that just gets passed on to the consumer. And the reason that's bad is, I mean, we hear right now with the new administration coming in on Wednesday how much money the Democrats are going to be getting out of Washington. When we talk about reinsurance, we want to have the money come out of the general fund, out of the sacrifice that Connecticut families have already made, because that's going to leverage the most federal dollars back to Connecticut. Putting the assessment, this tax, on an insurance policy is going to make it more expensive. It doesn't reduce the cost. It actually increases the cost. And the other problem with this is that 70% of the Connecticut insurance market is self-insured, and that's the big companies. That's your, you know, Sikorsky, your Electric Boat, your UTC, those types of companies. The small companies, you know, your local deli, your realtor, your small business mom and pop shops are more likely to be in what's known as the fully insured market, which is about 30%. And that's where this tax is going to be laid. It's going to be put on the people who actually buy insurance from insurance companies. And that's, once again, middle
class group plans.
Connecticut. Yeah. Small group plan. Mm-hmm. It's going to hit the middle class, and that's actually the backbone of Connecticut's economy.
It is.
When we see the statistics that we're dead last in the nation in job growth, it's because of policies like this. Policies that not only make it more expensive for Connecticut middle class families to exist, but it's also more expensive and has a damaging effect on jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why Connecticut's not affordable. It's the unwise choices that Connecticut Democrats make.
Mm-hmm. I mean, not to mention that it really feels like our insurance industry here in Connecticut is just completely under attack. Like, that's what it feels like.
Well, it is. And quite frankly, as much as you show them these statistics that we can leverage more money from Washington, it's going to get, this burden off the back of small business. It's going to bring the relief that's necessary. Actually, in our bill, there's actually a component that's going to reduce the cost of medical expenses year over year, which is the real driver. The Democrats keep focusing on premium. The premium is going to keep going up as long as the cost of medical care goes up. We get our hands around that.
I just feel, and granted, I know I'm a little biased because I grew up in an insurance family. My father has his own brokerage in Fairfield, Connecticut, and that's part of our livelihood, even in our house. My husband works there as well. I'm just curious, with something as big as like a health insurance tax or this public option in Connecticut, how many brokers really are being considered? Like, are they being talked to in Connecticut to make these sort of decisions? Like, I understand that's lawmakers' jobs to pass these bills, but I feel like these guys are the ones who are on the phones, and they're the ones dealing with carriers, and they're the ones who know the market better than anybody, and they know what's happening. And I feel like we're making these decisions that not only are going to land on the middle class, but you're also going to drive brokers out of town. Like, I think we're I don't know. I'm just wondering, like, could you maybe touch on like how many brokers are actually talked to about some of these policies to actually get the factual data that we need to make these decisions?
Well, Melissa, this is where I think there's a big difference in the parties in Connecticut. I believe the Connecticut Republicans, we do listen to brokers.
Yeah.
We do listen to the industry. That's why when I was on ranking on insurance, we looked at this initiative of the reinsurance, and it came out of the conversations with, our major employer, in Connecticut. Our flagship industry is insurance. We're the insurance capital of the world. But yet, it doesn't resonate with Connecticut Democrats, because I think what they're doing here is taking a national narrative. It's something that a think tank in Washington came up with. Maybe this is good for Nevada or Arkansas, because there is no insurance industry like there is in Connecticut mm-hmm. in those states. But here, it's about jobs, as well as bringing the premium and health care relief to Connecticut's families. That's why I came up with the reinsurance. And as a matter of fact, it was looked at twice by the Connecticut Exchange. They had an actual study done by, it's known as the Wakely Report, if anybody wants to see it. They had it done in 2018 and again in 2019 to look at, will this really leverage money out of Washington? And is an assessment on the carriers going to, bring less relief? And the answer was yes twice. I think they did it twice because they didn't believe that what we were offering would actually bring what we were promising. And that tells me that they're not looking at the solution to families' problems. They want to bring forward a political narrative. It's also why, let's look at the facts. 8 years ago, the Affordable Care Act was passed. Mm-hmm. 8 years ago, people in Connecticut were promised affordable health care. It's 8 years later, and we're still, the majority still talking about trying to bring that relief, while we've had a bill on the table ready to go to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't have the votes to accomplish this relief. And
that's
the
scary.
Big issue, is they'd rather keep it as a political opportunity rather than bring relief for Connecticut's families.
Which is crazy to me. It's just a crazy thing. Well, Senator
crazy
Kevin Kelly.
To me too.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I can only imagine how frustrating it is. Well, Senator Kevin Kelly, we appreciate you coming on every week and just keeping us updated on what's happening in Hartford. And we'll talk again next week. Have a good weekend.
You bet. Thank you, Melissa.
Hey, good morning. We are coming up on 8:40 and there's this digital divide that we're going through, especially with the pandemic. And something that was brought to my attention, I thought was really exciting, especially for Stratford, Connecticut. So take a listen to this. There's a Connecticut town joining the Digital Dreams Project Drive to refurbish donated computers for in-need elderly. I thought this was so cool. And immediately I thought to myself, well, why exactly are we seeing it in Stratford specifically? What is the Digital Dreams Project? So, you know, I had to talk about this. I had to question it. And this morning, Clayton Boris is here, who's the vice president of education at Planet ROI. And Clayton, thanks so much for coming on this morning. I appreciate it. How are you?
I'm great. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. So first of all, what is the Digital Dreams Project? How long has it been around?
So the Digital Dreams Project was launched at the end of 2020. And it's the undertaking of our company. The digital divide is really one of the biggest problems facing in-need Americans right now. And both kids who lack devices as well as our senior community who need them, especially now with COVID and trying to keep in touch with loved ones or trying to attend telehealth appointments. There's a real gap in America right now with people who have the ability to have technology to participate in those activities and a lot of people that don't.
Okay. So why Stratford, Connecticut? Like, why out of all of Connecticut did Stratford get picked?
So it's a little selfish, I think, on my end. So I grew up in Stratford. It is. So I've been a resident for most of my life. I grew up here. I raised my family here. My kids are here. And when we launched the program, I thought we have a really diverse town. There's a lot of different people in our community, and I really wanted to find a way to help the people where I grew up.
I think
and
this is brilliant.
And so I talked with the folks over at, you know, the Economic Development Group and the Community Services team. They were very receptive to learning about it and wanting to impact the seniors in our community.
That's brilliant. I love that. Now, how exactly does this work? Like, do seniors have to sign up to qualify for a computer?
That's a great question. So the seniors who are interested in receiving advice through it, I believe, will be talking to Tamara or Tammy Trojanowski over Community Services. We're also working with Karen Doyle in the Department of Economic Development. So from myself and my team, we're going to be partnering with some students on Monday, Martin Luther King Day, and it's been really shaped as them helping as a day of service. So between 11 and 2, we're going to be hosting the drive at the Baldwin Center in Stratford, where people can identify those devices that have been sitting around their house. Like, you have to know that you have an old laptop or an old desktop that, you know, it's been sitting there for a couple of years. It's collecting dust. You know, when I looked around my house, we had 3 or 4, you know, units that nobody's even using.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the devices that we're asking people to look in their closets, under their beds, you know, in their dressers, wherever they may be. Pull them out, bring them down to the Baldwin Center. We're going to take them off your hands. We destroy any data that may be on it. So we are fully certified to secure and make sure that all that data is destroyed. We're going to refurbish it, and our goal is to get in the hands of the people in the community who really need that device.
Okay, so I would imagine, do you need chargers as well for these devices or no?
You know what? If you have them, bring them. You know, the more that we have that we can put back into that device is helpful for us.
Okay.
What I do want to say, it's not your typical, this isn't a recycle event, so we're not looking for old TVs or old, like, fat monitors or printers, right?
Right.
We're really looking for the devices that, you know it works.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Somebody got you a new item for your birthday or for the holidays, so what do you do with the old one? Well, let's get in the hands of a senior in our community who really needs it.
I think this is such a brilliant concept. Talking to Clayton Boris this morning, and we're talking about the Digital Dreams Project. It's actually a pretty new project, and what it's doing is it's taking old, I don't want to say old, but, you know, devices that are not being used anymore, but they function, they work perfectly well, and putting them in the hands of seniors so that they can connect, they can use these online devices. You know, a lot of you have been calling in, just for example, for like the COVID vaccine sign up, and a lot of you have said, look, I don't have a computer at home. I have to only do it over the phone. And in a lot of people are encouraging you to actually sign up online. It's easier, it's faster, it's less of a wait, it's less of a pain. But a lot of you just don't have a computer. So, Clayton, what would you say at this point, you know, if you are, you know, if you're a senior, a lot of people are also just intimidated by computers and don't feel like, well, maybe I just don't need them. Why would you say there's such a need right now for seniors specifically to get these computers?
You know, I think that COVID has really exposed how people are with a lack of interaction with their family, with their friends, mm-hmm. and especially with health appointments. So, you know, seniors especially, you know, we want to make sure that our seniors are healthy in our town. And maybe they can't go out until they get the vaccine, and maybe there's some challenges there. So getting that device into their hands, working with our town to help them get trained on that device so that they are comfortable in using it, so that they can touch base with their family and their grandkids, or get in front of their doctor because maybe, you know, they haven't had a checkup in a year.
That's true.
You know, mm-hmm. This is a tool that will really help, hopefully make them more comfortable with technology in terms of how to use it, but also expand the horizon and make them, you know, a little happier in what's probably been a pretty challenging year for them.
Mm-hmm. And again, this collection is happening on Monday. So on the holiday, a lot of your kids are off from school that day. Maybe you're off from work. And if you want to go and drop off one of these devices, there's a collection happening from 11 in the morning until, I think it's, is it 1 or 2 in the afternoon?
You know, we're going to be there until 2.
Okay.
I know, I think the information said 1, but we're willing to stay for as long as people are going to be coming up.
Okay.
It's a secure drop-off. You know, we're all going to have masks. It's going to be very secure. We're going to take your devices, tag them, give you some information so that we can follow up with you moving forward. So this is going to be an ongoing program, and you're going to get to learn how your devices impacted our community.
So I think that's so cool.
We're not looking at this as a one-shot thing. We want to keep it going.
I love that. And again, this is at the Baldwin Center in Stratford. If you want to drop off desktop computers, laptop computers, tablets, with the exception of Amazon devices, or smartphones, exception of iPhones or iCloud locked devices, please go and drop them off Monday starting at 11 o'clock. You can go and really make a huge difference for a senior who can't either afford or just does not have a computer device for some of these needs that we're seeing in the pandemic. Clayton, keep up the good work. I'm excited to see which town or city you help out next with this project. I think it's amazing. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Absolutely. Good luck on Monday. All right. We're checking in right now with my mother, Claudia, for Cooking with Claude. Hey, Mom. How you doing?
Hi, honey.
How are you?
I'm good, and you know what? I was listening to you, and I do appreciate the person that mentioned, I could see the whole difference being so different with...
the golden raisins.
Raisins, absolutely. Oh, my God, that's such a great idea.
That's what I thought, too. I thought, oh, you know, and it's so funny because, well, she was Italian as well, but she totally spoke our language. She's like, oh, it looks like bugs. And I thought, that's something my mom and I would say. Like, if we looked at food and we thought, oh, gosh, it just is off-putting. And it made complete sense. So I had to share that with you. But, yeah, I thought she was spot on.
Especially with the color of the, like, the cherries. They're green, they're red. And then instead of putting something dark in there, it just makes it more look like Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I thought so too. I thought it was a nice little add-on to your recipe. And she's a big fan, so there you go.
Yay.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Thank you.
So I was telling everyone, I am not a very big fish fan. I don't really like fish, but I know that your sole, your salmon, and your swordfish, you have literally been able to flip fish haters into fish lovers. My husband and I being two of those people. So today we're doing your soul of fish, aren't we? Or your fish of soul?
No, we're doing fillet of soul.
Fillet of soul. Mom, I have been literally on the phone since 5:30 this morning.
Oh my gosh! Water because you were so parched.
I was. I really was. Okay, so your fillet of soul we're doing this morning. So how do you make it?
Okay, so you start in a bowl, and in that bowl, you, by the time you add all these ingredients, you want it to look kind of like a wet sand is what they call it.
Hmm.
So, yeah, it's kind of gross.
No, but I know what you're talking about. Like, you go to the beach and your kid takes a bucket of water and they pour it on the sand. That's what it looks like.
That's the consistency you kind of want. Like, and then when you were to pick that up, it's not like it's, you know, sand that slides through your hands.
Correct.
But it's wet.
Yeah, that makes sense. No, that's perfect imagery. I'm picturing it right now.
Perfect. So what you want to do is start with, like, somewhere around 3/4 cup of breadcrumbs, a couple tablespoons of oil. You want to shred the lemon peel of a lemon. Get around a teaspoon of that. You want to get your 1/2 cup of Parmesan cheese and, of course, your 1 1/2 teaspoons of oregano. If you need to add just a little bit more oil, I put in probably 4 tablespoons. But and then you mix that together, and you'll see exactly what wet sand kind of looks like.
Okay. Yeah. No. Like I said, I'm totally picturing it.
So then you want to get your pan. You want to get a pan, but you need the rims on it because otherwise you don't want it slipping off like a cookie pan.
Okay. All right. So like those little where it's got spaces in between.
Where it's got like a rim around the side.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes. Okay. Got it. You don't want it to fall off the edge.
It's up on the side so, like, it's not flat.
I got you. Nope. Now I'm following you. Okay.
Then I always spray everything with some kind of cooking spray. So I happen to use a spray olive oil spray. You put your, line up your fish, however many you want to do. And then once you line them up, you pour the white wine around it, which is somewhere, around a cup of white wine. And then you take your sand and you place it, all on top of the fish. Can you see me, like, placing it?
I'm watching you. It's unbelievable.
With a spoon, like, where they're nice and covered. And then you want to, sprinkle with a little parsley, and you bake it. And you bake it, I think I baked mine about 20 minutes.
Okay.
And, I always like my fish a little bit more well done, so I checked it in about 20 minutes. It looked good. And then you top broil it for like 6 minutes to make your breadcrumb and Parmesan and all that kind of a little bit more crispy. And then, if you want to garnish it, you could put a little lemon wedge for a little fancy with a little parsley around the side, and then you serve it. And it came out amazing.
Yeah, that sounds so, so good. Now, what do you like to pair your fish with as like a side? What do you like to give for a side? I know I'm throwing you off, but what do you – I always feel like broccoli is so good with fish.
Yes, I think any of the greens are good with fish because back in the day, my mother told me you don't want to eat an all-white dish. Like, you don't want to have fish and cauliflower and rice.
Right.
Because
no,
then
you
you're eating
that.
An all-white dish.
And who wants that? Like, it's so boring.
Yeah, so I would definitely like... Dad and I actually paired it up with grapefruit.
Oh, look at you.
Week. Yeah, because I forgot, Dad really likes grapefruit. So
yeah.
I cut a grapefruit, cut around it, cut the little slices, and we had grapefruit and the fish because there's only him and me at home. I don't have to do an awful lot of cooking. But I would say, a green bean or, broccoli or snow peas or something like that because, a green salad, whatever you feel like.
I think that sounds delicious. Well, Mom, that sounds fantastic. And if anybody wants that recipe before you start cooking for this weekend, I'm going to put it on the podcast right after the show wraps up at 10 o'clock. So thanks, Mom. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you.
Oh, my gosh. You're so frigging cute. I love you.
I love you too.
All right, Mom. I'll talk to you after the show.